When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
Thank you so much for joining us. Give us 5 stars in a review. And don't mind Vince. Vince is suffering from some sort of nasal issue. Something wrong with his nasals. What do you have, like a
sinus infection?
Oh, sinus infection.
Yeah, okay. It's fun. Sometimes you get sick when it's 110 degrees out. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's a new one for me, but
that is pretty new because it's not a cold. You know, it's a hot.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a hot.
Exactly. Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah.
Those are the kind of jokes you're going to be getting if you go to patreon.com/broadcast and sign up to listen to our bonus episodes. Jokes like it's a hot and other ones. But yes, I just want to say real quick. I've been looking at the reviews, Vince, that have been coming in. Uh-huh. And I will say that there's been a noticeable slowdown. People are not taking my calls to action seriously. They're not going and leaving 5 stars in a review. And it's starting to piss me off, bro. So if you're hearing this, and I know you are, do it. Go to the Apple iTunes store or whatever, and then be like 5 stars, and then be like, oh, this rules. You know, help Vince and I out. Okay.
Yeah. We need it. Come on. Come on, you guys.
Come on. What are you fucking stupid? Sorry. I probably shouldn't insult them. Anyways, today, Vince and I, and a guest, are going to be talking about from season 3 of The Wire, episode 9, Slapstick. And our guest today, oh, everyone, I'm very excited to introduce our guest. You might have heard this next guest on some episodes of the Fraudcast before. And she is a writer and a comedian and just one of our all-time favorite people. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is Allison Mick. Fuck. Yay.
Hi.
Hi, sorry. I have to label the sound pads. Hi, Allison.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. It's so nice to see you again. You know, it's been a while because I've been inside because of, you know, COVID and the baby.
Yeah.
But how have you been?
Good. I'm less crazy now that we're not talking in the middle of lockdown.
Yeah.
I go outside and stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, outside is fun. I like outside.
I've heard great things about it. It's all right.
Yeah, no, it's almost exactly what people say. It's like
the sun wind and shit.
The sun and there's clouds and stuff. It's been a bit since I've seen you, and I feel like I haven't been able to ask you this very important question. Do you like The Wire?
I do like The Wire. It's good. It's a good show.
Hell yeah.
It's a great show, even.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you think so, because this is a podcast about The Wire.
Well, now that that's out of the way.
Fuck you, Vince. You ask a question.
Thank you for bringing me here to talk about Cop Death.
Yes.
And other wiry things.
And other things wire related. Do you, in your life, do you have any cops in your life? Family members? Best friends?
No, I'm not sad about it. No, it's like, unfortunately not.
Yeah, but... same. And because of that, this is a very fun episode to talk about because this is something I've been waiting for a while on the show. It's Przybylowski's coming out party as as Antifa. you know, it's pretty exciting, and I don't know. I'm stoked to talk about it. Do you have a favorite character on The Wire, Allison?
I like Bunny Colvin.
You like Bunny? Yeah.
He's a big brain thinker. I like what he's doing. His freckles are fun.
Yeah, those are fun.
He's big and cuddly.
Yeah, he's a bunny. I love Bunny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do you think he's called Bunny?
Because he fucked a rabbit during like initiation or something.
Yeah. Mm. They're like, do it, fuck a rabbit. And yeah, I don't like, know. Okay.
Cops, man. They're like,
cops are
up.
Weird. Yeah. Yeah. Vince, do you have any theories?
I used to work with a guy that on a farm, and the farm workers called him El Conejo, because, you know, which means the rabbit, because when he would walk through the fields, he would like sort of hop a little bit. So maybe it has something to do with his his bouncy gait.
With his gait?
Yeah.
Maybe he has 18 kids.
Dude. Like,
yeah.
That's very possible. Maybe he's always going into other people's gardens and eating all of their plants.
Yeah. Maybe he's a vegetarian. Who knows?
Who knows? And more importantly, who cares? This is, of course, a podcast about The Wire. Which is why you should care. But of course, we cannot start this podcast without first playing the theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. Podcast.
I love watching Allison very much enjoy
the
this.
The Irish Pod. Season 3.
I gotta say, I very much enjoy watching you, Allison, in a little window under that video, just laughing your ass off. Isn't it
I haven't seen that ever, and wow.
Yeah, well, we're very highbrow here. Isn't it nice to be back with the Frot Boys? Just doing
as long as we're keeping the Irish out.
As long as we keep the Irish, and we gotta keep them out of the podcast,
of the hole. Yeah,
where that's
keep
where
them on the pod.
That's where the devil is.
That's the devil's hole.
That's right. It's his hole. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else today. Once again, we're talking about from season 3 of The Wire, episode 9, Slapstick. This came out November 21st, 2004. Vince, top of your head, breaky, breaky piece of Sinopi Wappy.
Everybody's finding out that the job will not save them, and the bigger picture is maybe unfulfilling, whether it's being a cop, being a nerd for the cops, or being a boxer for the neighborhood kids.
I love it. That sounds right.
Listen,
sounds right to me, Vince.
I could have used more identifying details, but I decided to go broad. This time,
I feel like broad is the way to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a synopsis. Like,
it's a synopsis. It's a little synopsis.
I'm synopsing over here.
I'm doing a little summary bummery. But Vince, this episode, as we said, came out November 21st, 2004. What was happening in America at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. We cannot evaluate art divorced of its cultural context. We got to put some of that context back in, and we do that with a little something we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day
machine tells the tale, son.
Yeah.
That's right. We're going all the way back, as Matt said, to November 21st, 2004. Some of the things that were going on. This was the Sunday after the Malice at the Palace. I don't know if you remember the Malice.
I do. Was that
what is that?
That was when Ron Artest and Steven Jackson jumped into the stands and started fighting fans over at what was it, in Detroit?
Yep, the palace, the something palace. I'm assuming it's got palace in the title, palace otherwise it wouldn't be called
Auburn. The Piston Palace.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was it? In my head, it's the palace at Auburn Hills. But
that sounds right.
Does it? Doesn't matter. I guess it does. You are talking about the story. Oh, go on. Tell me about that malice at palace.
Oh,
yeah, what
well,
is that?
Artest, comma, others will sit for fight. Indiana's Ron Artest, Jermaine O'Neal, and Steven Jackson, and Detroit's Ben Wallace were suspended indefinitely by the NBA yesterday for taking part in one of the ugliest brawls in U.S. sports history, a fight with fans that Commissioner David Stern called, quote, shocking, repulsive, and inexcusable. League officials and police were examining videotapes of the melee Friday night and interviewing witnesses. The NBA issued a statement saying it was reviewing rules and security procedures, quote, so that fans can continue to attend our games unthreatened by events such as the ones that occurred Friday night.
God.
Okay, but what did the fans do to piss them off?
Did a lot.
They did a
fuck ton.
Yeah, yeah. They did it. Well, one guy lobbed a soda. Ron Artest was mad about a foul, I think. So he laid down on the scorer's table, and one of the Detroit fans lobbed a big soda and it landed on him.
Mm-hmm.
So then he got pissed, and then
someone was throwing
coins, I believe I remember, or pieces of ice. They were literally beaming them with small solid objects.
Yeah.
And
so,
I
think
so they got whooped and deserved it.
Well, Ron Artest went up to go punch that guy who would have completely deserved it, but he didn't know who hit him, and he ended up just punching some other random guy.
Yeah, that was a problem.
Good.
And then,
oh, that's fun. That's like a Detroiter sketch.
Some other guy, after the brawl already started, there was fans that were like, well, I'm going to go fight an NBA player, which seems like the dumbest thing one could possibly do.
Just to say that you got a swing in? Like, come on.
Yeah. Someone full on squared up with Jermaine O'Neal, and I think he knocked the guy's head off, basically. And
yeah. And I remember Steven Jackson.
That guy's cousins are still dining out on that story.
100%.
But it's great that this news story is all about how these immature players or whatever. It's like, hey, maybe you should have some security at your sporting events so the fans don't throw sodas on people. I don't know. Just a thought.
Don't and let them throw stuff.
And I remember that, it was very much...
I like it when shit like this breaks down because I love to heckle and stuff. But when you get to the point where you're doing physical things or you're getting personal, then the barrier between you and player should break down. You are not
completely
should not be protected by that.
You can throw a dildo onto the ice, but you cannot throw things at a guy.
That's
the hating the player, the not ice, the game.
We all that's enjoy funny. That. That's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, even the players are like, oh, what if the hockey puck was a dick? Everyone loves
that's
that.
That's fun for everybody.
But they were assaulting them first. And what I remember about this specifically was how Ron Artest became the focus of it and not Steven Jackson or Jermaine O'Neal.
Let me guess. Is he the darkest skinned of all of them?
Well, technically,
Steven Jackson would be.
I'm
a skin color.
If I were doing.
Oh, so you have a list? Vince?
If I were doing a paper bag test list. It was just that Ron Artest had kind of been known as sort of a quote dirty player. He had been my favorite kind of player, by the way. Totally. Someone who gives a shit.
Exactly.
A natural born winner.
A natural born fucking winner.
Michael Jordan does it, and everyone's like, let's suck his dick.
I know. Exactly. And so Ron Artest was, maybe had a history of a little bit more conflict in the game. But there's a wonderful redemption arc with that story, which was that Ron Artest eventually got therapy.
Opened a boxing gym for the kids in the neighborhood?
He did. he went to therapy. He changed.
That's different.
It's the same, though. He changed his name to Meta World Peace. And then he won a championship with the Lakers, hit a game-winning three, or hit a very important clutch three-pointer during Game 7 against the Boston Celtics at home at Staples. And then when they won, he was interviewed, and they were like, what do you have to say? And he's like, the first person he thanked was his therapist.
Aww.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
that's just such a wonderful story. I'm just like, Michael Jordan would never. He would never. He would bully his therapist. He would just do mind games.
You're not as
on
good
him.
As the therapist I used to have.
Or yeah, I'd be like, you know, I got another therapist just to run by what some of what you've been saying.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. For different parts of his brain, he's got
I'm
a different therapist.
Testing your therapy and he does not agree. Dude, he would so do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways, that's a great story.
Yeah. So the Malice at the Palace, that's
fun.
That's one story. Another story, Hussein sought modest missiles, which I like that headline.
Saddam Hussein?
Saddam Hussein.
No, Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah, yeah. The insurgency is really heating up in Iraq. The Sunni triangle, it's going nuts. And we're also finding out that, oops, surprise, surprise, there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, yeah.
While the White House was fixated on Saddam Hussein's interest in procuring biological and chemical weapons, evidence uncovered by American investigators suggests that the Iraqi president spent his final years in power more determined to develop and deploy conventional ballistic missiles, hoping to keep pace with his neighbors in the Middle East.
Oh, dude, he did have WMDs, but they were weapons of modest destruction.
That's right.
So same, you know.
Yeah.
The picture of the Middle East security that is coming into focus after 20 months of war suggests that Iraq was less focused on chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons over the past decade than it was locked in a regional arms race for short-range conventional weapons.
Get me all the slingshots! We're going to kill birds!
In which Iran, Israel, and Syria stand out as the most potent contestants.
Potent contestant.
Yeah, maybe they were do
a
little
sexy
one-on-one
news copy.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. Yeah, a little one-on-one action.
Was that from Reuters?
Syria.
That was from
Christian Science Monitor.
The Baltimore Sun, actually.
Wow, look at that.
Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore.
The Wire.
And we always got to do one for fun, which I usually go to the New York Post for that.
I love it.
A plus headline on this one. Your flyered SUVs hit with eco literature.
Dash ature.
That's right. Yeah.
Got it.
Eco
West
flyer.
Village SUV owners are jacked up over anonymous environmentalists' windshield flyer campaign against their, quote, weapons of mass consumption.
Oh, everyone's doing the pun. This is fun.
For 2 months, unknown environmentalists have been tucking brightly colored anti-SUV flyers under the windshield wipers of the big vehicles on several streets. I drive a weapon of mass consumption, say the bumper sticker size flyers, which include the web address www.idontcareaboutair.com. Quote, we aim to educate consumers about the environmental hazards of SUVs, says Drew Agris, founder of Colorado-based site, who has gotten several complaints from New Yorkers about the flyers.
What are those complaints? Hey, yo, whoa, that's
hey,
it.
Oh,
hey, what are you going to do?
Well, it wouldn't be a New York Post story without that comment. SUV owner Jackie Silver wishes she knew who'd put the six flyers on her Lincoln Navigators in the last 2 months. She wants to yell at them. It's really, really annoying, Silver said. These people should get a life.
It doesn't
teach me a message. It pisses me off, said another angry SUV owner who wouldn't give his name.
Okay, but...
They don't have the right to put their garbage on my car.
Yeah, you can't just put litter on my car. That's bullshit. If anyone's
going to... This is New York City. We don't do that
here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who's putting flyers around? That's new. yeah, but like, how like shocked were they that a journalist was covering this at all? You know, they were like, oh, wow, I didn't think anyone would ask about the flyers. I mean, I'll say getting an annoying flyer on a car is annoying. There's someone in my fucking neighborhood who keeps putting their business card on.
I don't care about air.com.
No, it's not.
Because there's titties on it.
If there's titties on it, I'll go to it because I do care about damn titties.
Typed it in and I was like, well, maybe it's still here. No, there's titties. This is a computer.
Oh, interesting.
Sounds
I didn't
like
even
it
do
got
that.
Better.
I should have done that level of research, but I didn't.
They put a business card on my car and it says like, it's something for like, it says, have an ugly car, question mark.
Wow.
Yeah, I get that one all the time.
Yeah. And then like, we'll sell, you know, we buy used pieces of shit.com or whatever. And I'm just like, I'm trying to live here, dog.
Yeah.
I'm trying to live. What are
it's
you
fucking
doing?
Rude. Like, it's you so probably rude. Have like a nice-ish car too. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's
I
a,
mean, I really
my car
think
sucks. So I'm like, yeah, I deserve this.
I mean, mine
I
is,
feel like we. I feel like there was a time in the aughts when we thought we could shame people into buying like less garish gas guzzling vehicles, and in the 19 years since, cars have only gotten bigger, and it's now people only buy trucks. So, yeah. And they're even bigger than they were before. So I guess that didn't work out so well.
No, also like the, I remember the kind of SUV panic around the, you know, in the early aughts in the environmentalist sphere. And it felt misguided even then. And now I think more so than ever, because it's just like, I mean, we're like parsing, we're like splitting hairs between like people who drive gas, moderate gas users versus like gas guzzlers. And it's like,
versus like a corporation that owns
versus like entire countries just burning every fossil fuel they can so they can keep up with like industrialization in the West. And, yeah. And so it's just like, I don't know, one feels worse.
I mean the energy
they're
seems
equally
like it's,
bad.
Yeah, it's all
the
bad.
Energy seems like it's gone more towards shaming rich people for using their private jets so much.
Yeah, or shaming
which
rich
I agree with.
For,
shaming them
with
the funniest memes though.
Yeah. Shaming rich people for going into a submarine that implodes. I think that was that's where we peaked as a society with the like deciding like we become blackpilled to the point where all we have left is celebrating the deaths of people who tried to do an expedition in a non-regulated.
That's what you get for being
stuff.
Curious, idiot.
Yeah, that's. Oh, I guess a bunch of rich people can't handle the crushing pressure of the water.
Oh, did the can hurt you?
Someone pointed out that inside the submarine, like it doesn't actually have windows, so. When
no,
they were down there, they were watching it on like a video screen, basically. So like they could have been doing the same shit like on the surface with nobody
dude,
in
they
there.
It could have been a simulation.
Yeah,
they could. Oh, they should have just dragged them around, and they wouldn't know, and just be like, "Look at that!" And they're like, "This game is cool."
Yeah. we're descending to 13,000 feet. Glub glub.
Ooh, everybody, put your
we're
hands
so
off.
Deep now. Oh my gosh! Do you hear? You feel your ears popping? Oh it's golly!
It's just the Star Tours ride from Disneyland.
Yeah,
I love that.
But yeah, it seems like I mean this was the
truck should be smaller though.
This was the age sure. when consumer choice was a little more. Of the thing, I think we've pivoted more to class warfare, which is
better,
probably,
I think.
Probably a good thing. That's better, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it has, I think, a greater chance of, no, neither gets anything done, but one leaves you with more friends. And if we're all going to die, I would like there to be a community, you know?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just holding hands on our way to the old trash incinerator,
that's
like Toy Story 3.
Right.
Aww.
Four. But
yeah,
whatever.
Sweet. Four? Was it four? I thought it was three.
Maybe it was three. I don't know.
I think it was three. That has been the Back in the Day machine.
Okay. So that is what happened in the news at the time.
So much has changed.
Everything's different now. You know, Runner Test changed his name. People drive SUVs and no one cares. But let's talk about this episode. The Balmer B story this week is based on, I think, my favorite storyline of this episode, in which Presbyluski, does a little bit of murder. So I have a little bit of a Balmer B story for you guys based on Lady Gaga's Paparazzi.
Oh,
Chinese takeout, Prez eats his fortune cookie. They get a signal 13 on the radio. Jubilee stuff on the way home.
You guys like Lady Gaga?
They decide to split up. Prez looks down the alley, sees a guy with a gun, and so he attacks. Thinks the cops will.
I'm done.
Oh, that,
you need to have another kid. You got too much time on your hands.
You know, I've become more and more efficient at making these songs. I can do them in about 1 hour. Most of it goes towards writing the lyrics. By the way, there is a
Back the Blueski is great.
Thank you. You know, that was took a lot of time to write Back the Blueski.
Well done.
Thank you. There's a second half to that song, which of course you can listen to at the very end of this episode. And you should, because I might actually play a little bit for Vince later on. because you
I
know
can't wait.
I feel like Vince, you miss out on some of the hottest parts of the song.
It's true. It's
and
true.
And so, yeah.
And I do like them. They are one of the best things about doing this podcast is hearing your parodies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Doc.
Yeah.
That's something I would throw a couple dollars on Patreon to you guys for.
You know, that everything you guys are saying is going to make me cry. so, yes, this episode is the one in which we've got Omar's grandmother getting shot in her crown, pissed on, in the ass, whatever. we've got a Hamsterdam murder mystery that is quickly solved using, you know, the gains from creating a free zone for selling drugs. We've got Cuddy getting a taste of local politics and that whole rigmarole. And of course, we have Comrade Presbyluski reporting for duty, sir. Vince, Allison, let's talk about it. Vince, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, I thought this was a great episode. Going back to this, I feel like this is sort of the theme for this season is that it's more of a TV show. It's more theatrical, more, you know, cathartic than you expect from The Wire. But I feel like there was times in the last two seasons where, you know, you get caught up in the weeds of these police procedurals and these investigations, because they're, you know, they're putting you in the shoes of these cops doing these investigations, and it's exciting, but at the same time it's like, yes, this is all in the service of like a drug war that you're not going to win and no one's going to care,
right?
You know, this was a very much like a big picture episode of totally. The Wire. And yeah, it's a little Hollywood when Lester Freeman comes in and just says
all the things,
know, says the theme of the show.
Yeah,
but like, if anyone's going to do it, it's Daddy Lester.
Daddy Lester
he's telling McNulty the job's not going to save you. McNulty, he's on a high after sex. He feels like a god.
Yeah,
and he's
a fuck god.
He's really feeling himself. He's thinking about how great he is. Even Prez is kind of like, he's really in it. He's really enjoying his little scavenger hunts and crossword puzzles.
Yeah, he's figured out how to put cameras in places and get the picture quality all good. You know,
yeah. So this is sort of an episode about like, you know, you can be caught up in all the little minutiae of your job, but as soon as you take one step outside your immediate circle, no one gives a fuck.
Right. Who cares?
Teresa D'Agostino, she doesn't give a fuck about your job.
Yeah.
All the other cops, they don't care about all the cool computer stuff you mm-hmm. can do. They just see you as a loser still.
Right.
So,
and you get twice the heartburn for the same pension.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right.
And the one cop who's actually doing anything that fucking matters is doing his best to keep it a secret, which shows you how
he's doing bad stuff in the service of good stuff, like
exactly.
really bad stuff.
He's like a bunny because yeah. everything's underground.
Yes, exactly. He's like bad bunny, bye bye. Allison, what did you think of this episode?
I love this episode. I forgot so much of this show.
Yeah.
So then when like it's like, oh no, like that's gonna happen, and when Presbyluski shoots the guy and it's like, oh, that's why he's a teacher next season.
That's right.
That's where they come from.
Yes.
All the substitute teachers have shot somebody.
Yeah, yeah. I got to say that, like, you know, I've had a yeah, you know, I went to a pretty shitty, you know, big city school district schools, and we had a lot of teachers who were former cops and whatnot, but a former cop who then shot another cop, I think that would be the cool teacher at the school.
Imagine being in middle school, mm-hmm. and you find that out about your teacher. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I wouldn't be doing... We'd be watching a movie every fucking day.
Yeah.
Mr. Prez, you were a cop. Did you ever shoot anyone? Well, okay. So first, I shot up my own car. That was
one thing.
Do you still
have a gun?
There's another time that I blinded a kid
because
he was mouthing off to me.
Yeah, he was
I did that
shit.
With a gun.
Yes.
Yeah, with a gun. Yeah, that way.
But not with a bullet.
Not with a bullet, but you can use both. That guns are multi-use. And then another time, I shot a guy. It's kind of funny because, like, that whole situation... They're all talking all this shit on Prez Belusky, but you got like a bunch of cops running around out there with no uniforms, pointing their guns at who knows what. They don't even know what they're looking for. They heard gunshots.
Those guys were getting Chinese food. They didn't even like.
They didn't need to be there.
They just showed up.
Well, that's
they
what
about
any
it,
of
like,
them could have
done.
We're
coming too. Like
they all rolled out looking for some action. None of them were wearing uniforms. Surprised it doesn't happen more often.
So here's my thing about Prez Belusky killing a cop.
A black cop.
Well, yeah, first of all, yikes. That's a big yikes for me, dog.
That's what Prez said.
That's what he said. It was a big yikes for him.
He was like, rrr.
Yeah, he said, rut-row. but no, I was, you know, so he kills this guy Wagner, who
Derek.
Is a Derek.
He shot Derek.
He shot Derek, a Baltimore City plainclothes police officer.
That's a great way to humanize him, is the fact that they immediately refer to him as Derek.
Yeah,
that's just like, that's a perfect normal guy name.
Is that Bill? Is that Billy? Little Billy did. Yeah. But
Derek.
No, so the Baltimore City plainclothes police detectives are notoriously one of the most fucked up police officers in the country. They are so famously corrupt and bad that after the entire, like, you know, Wayne Jenkins fiasco from the We Own the City, the commissioner. He went on live TV and he said these guys are nothing more than 1930s era fucking gangsters. And then he banned plainclothes policing in Baltimore City. That is, so if you think about it, if this had been real life, Prez could have accidentally shot, you know, Wayne Jenkins himself. And how many lives would have been saved?
And like, oh man, he's got a badge and also a pocket full of money and another pocket full of drugs that he stole
and a car full of BB guns that he plants on people he shot just in case.
Also, this guy was on the up, like, they're like, he was a rising star, like,
well, right, which is
what fucked up stuff
famously
was he doing to
the worst kind of plainclothes police officer is the one who's a rising star, because that just means they're getting the most arrests and it means they've probably killed some guys. I'm not saying
he wasn't even chasing the thing they were there for. He was on some other business.
I got to imagine the guy that they were all chasing looked back and was like, oh, well, this is the best case scenario. And then ran away. He's like, oh, thank you, Comrade Prez Belusky.
Meanwhile, the Curb Your Enthusiasm music's playing over Prez Belusky.
Yeah. So it was pretty, you know, my thought on it is, if you're gonna kill a cop, killing a Baltimore plainclothesman, not like the worst kind.
Do you have power rankings for like who? Like,
we don't, but we should.
L.A. Sheriff's Department gang members.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're at the top. Hey, if the L.A. Sheriff's Department is listening to this podcast, I'm coming for you, motherfucker. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding. Oh, my God.
They've already identified your location based on your background.
Gotta go.
Four big guys, and they bust on my eyes. They eat my ass just like apple pie. If they keep fucking me like this, I might just die. They pipe my booty till I cry.
What if they just killed me in the middle of that? I come back covered in blood and grimace shake.
I like that they make them drive around in those like gray Nissan Sentras. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know. It's a cool car for, you know.
Yeah, cops. Times have changed. Like, they're not doing the Ford Tauruses anymore.
No.
That'd be cool now if, you know, they just made all the cops drive like a Toyota Yaris.
Oh, yeah. That would rule.
Some big cop popping
instead
out of a
charger
Yaris.
Instead of a charger with lights in the grill.
What are you guys doing over there? Nobody takes you seriously when you jump out of a Toyota Yaris.
It's a coupe.
It looks like a tic-tac.
When you arrest someone to put them in the back, you have to roll the driver's seat all the way up so you can push them in the back. I love this episode. It is, for me, one of the episodes this season. I think there's only a handful this season where it's like one of the big events that happens, you know. It's fucking I mean, the big events are Avon and Stringer are fighting. Avon and Stringer, you know, what happens later on, we'll see. I don't know. And then Brezbulewski killing a guy.
This was just like an abrupt turning point just out of left field. Like usually plot lines, I guess there's been a few like out of the blue events in The Wire, like the whole Ziggy storyline coming to a head last season, but still feels
That duck came out of nowhere.
No, I know, him killing that duck was actually sadder than no, I'm just kidding.
They're probably like
for the duck.
They probably thought, you know, we've made Brezbulewski look too good for too many episodes now. Like he's the one cop that seems like he has like a stable home life, and he's in it just for the intellectual satisfaction he gets from catching bad guys. And
that's
like,
right.
Yeah, we're not gonna let him succeed for too long. We gotta.
The thing about this guy is that he's a fuck up, and no matter how good he is at the things inside that building, he's still got to leave at some point.
Exactly. As soon as he steps outside, he is a danger. And I think that, like, I think that, like, this show with the character of Brezbulewski does a great job of showing a kind of, I don't know, a viewpoint about policing and who should be a guy with a gun and who shouldn't be a guy with a gun, because you grow to, you know, love Brezbulewski after a while, after he, you know, blinds that kid. You know, you're a little soured on him. You're like, this guy fucking sucks. He is a racist piece of shit. And
he shot a wall one time.
He shot a wall.
Shot up his car.
He shot up his car.
That's so fucking funny, though.
Yeah, like he's a loose cannon, and he's a fucking idiot. But then you see him in a position in the, you know, police department where he is actually of some use. Now, whether or not it's actually any use at all to like build a giant case against drug dealers and then arrest them, that remains to be seen. But showing him, you know, kind of like being able to use some sort of skills to kind of like, I don't know, it's nice to see someone succeed at doing something. And I don't know, he had a redemption arc, sort of. And
I love how firmly like anti-Nepo baby.
Oh, yeah.
This show continues to be. Because it's like this kind of life, this game, like, there's no dynasties in this.
Yeah, like, I mean, all
you can't pass it on.
All Nepo babies in the show get fucked. I mean, we got D'Angelo Barksdale, and we have now Roland Brezbulewski, and
Nikki Sabatka.
Yeah, Nikki Sabatka, Ziggy Sabatka.
All your shitty nephews. The show is coming for all your shitty nephews.
Cheese. I mean, this show is, you know, at its core, or at least one of the themes of the show is how this younger generation is getting fucked over, how we can't really rely on having the same standard of living that our parents had. So, you know, that applies to, I think, the Sopotkas, applies to...
I wish I'd been paying attention when I was watching this back in, like, 2008.
Yeah, no, it's a hard show to pay
attention. I was like, he killed a guy. I'm never going to learn anything from this.
Yeah, I think my first watch, I was just like, where's Omar? The whole time.
Show me Omar. Yeah,
so, yeah, Przybylowski is someone who had a redemption arc, and then... I think, you know, it lulled you into complacency and made you forget that
he had a de-redemption arc in this episode.
Yes. Yes, he did. And I do have a clip of that. Let's watch as Przybylowski gets some Chinese food with his friends.
You do the cookie first.
What's the difference?
A new friend makes himself known.
Himself. Herself, then you'd have a fortune.
Can I just say that the idea that, like, fucking...
Prez eats the cookie first?
Well, him eating the cookie first, hey, whatever you feel, dog.
No, that's such a good detail, because he's the exact kind of guy where it's like, yeah, like, eating the cookie first, like, sure, that's it's not the worst thing a person can do, but it's the exact type of thing where... people around you are going to be like, the fuck is wrong with you, you weirdo? Yeah, like, why are you eating the cookie first? Like, everybody else eats cookie last. It's That's generally understood. And you come in here doing your weird shit, and we don't like it.
Wow, he's a renegade. Yeah. he's a rogue cop. He's about to kill another one. but the fortune that he gets is a new friend makes himself known. And this is some clear foreshadowing of, you know, some friendly fire that's about to happen. And, you know, that's doing a little bit of art, a little narrative art, right?
Mm. A little poetic license there?
Yeah, a little poetry. But then we have, of course, McNulty being like, himself? I think the fortune thinks you're gay. And then, of
wish
course...
wish that cookie had a pussy.
Yeah, I wish
I could leave messages at its office.
Exactly. And then, of course, we see what happens with all that.
15 minutes later.
So, yeah.
It's Derek. Jesus Christ. He killed Derek. It's Wagner. He fucking killed Wagner.
A cab.
I guess A cab no longer applies to Roland Przybylowski. And for that, we can be thankful. So, yeah, kills him and then, changes the entire arc of the second half of this show. And, of course, the arc of Roland Przybylowski as a character, in which now he is having to deal with the fallout. And a big part of the fallout turns out to be because he's the guy he shot. The cop was black. Mm. And people are going to make a thing out of it. And Valchek, you know,
people.
Yeah, yeah. Certain people. I don't think I gotta say their names. Gonna be
you
a little
people,
a little uppity about it. I don't think I gotta say who. But wink.
This is Baltimore.
This is Baltimore. And what I think I love about Przybylowski is that he is in such a state after the fact when he's talking to Daniels, he kind of admits that it could be racism, that he doesn't actually know. Like, at first he's like, I didn't care that he was black, or maybe I did. I don't fucking know.
He's like, yeah. I cannot overstate how little I was thinking when I shot that gun. It's just nothing.
So the only times I think are like, oh, I wonder what fortune cookie says, and I wonder
what the jumble does.
Yeah, what jumble does, and I wonder if, you know, I wonder if I'm gonna eat chicken, or if I'm
sometimes
not gonna
I
eat
punch
chicken.
Sometimes I punch my father-in-law.
Yeah, sometimes I punch him in face.
So, do I still get to eat that lo mein? Or yeah.
you know, I didn't even get my sweet and sour pork.
My sweet and sour.
Yeah. So I do like that, you know, maybe he's just, he's lucid to a degree that I wouldn't expect, I think, in real life, but because it's a TV show, I.
Well, his amount of introspection makes him a bad street officer.
Exactly. But also a good person.
Yeah.
If all cops just shot one cop.
Yeah.
It would just like turn something in their brain.
Yeah.
Oh, and that they'd was be like, huh?
That was more fun.
I'm unpacking my invisible knapsack.
Right. Yeah. Am I free? I'm free. Yeah. And, you know, I do love that he's, he's like, oh, fuck this. I shouldn't be a cop. And everyone's like, yeah,
probably true. You probably
should.
That's
when he's like, I shouldn't be a cop.
Yeah.
He needed something big. I mean, but then the rest of this episode is mostly McNulty's episode. It starts with McNulty getting a call, a booty call.
Oh,
hi, Brent.
Hey,
speaking of booty calls.
Yeah, I'm going to call all your booties. before we get too far into McNulty's storyline, we should probably take a break for ads.
Let's do it. That's right.
Ads.
We gotta do ads because guess what? We got babies. We got Vince is sick. He's dying. He's got a nose cancer.
He got desert in his nose.
Yeah, he's got a hot. So we need to make some money. So stick around, listen to these ads, and we'll be right back. Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? Not like around, you know, the block or whatnot. I'm not saying have you seen, run into him at your local grocery store. I'm saying, have you seen what his body looks like? He is still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. And what's even more shocking is he somehow looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, and yes, I have started drinking it. Why? Because they sent me some. And honestly, I've never felt better. My digestion is smoother, my body looks leaner, and I have energy all day. I feel younger, even though I am a young man. I feel even younger, bro. Like, if you know anything about me, you know that I'm someone who is obsessed with gut health, all right? You know, I drink kombucha. I like a probiotic drink. I do all sorts of things to make sure that my gut is healthy. And I'll tell you, this is actually great for your gut. And it actually tastes good, which is not something you can say about kombucha. Let's be honest. And another thing I loved about it, easy to prepare. I love that it's just something you just mix with water and stir. I didn't have to, like, you know, learn to make a culture from a SCOBY or whatever. Like, I just had to buy some Morning Kick, mix it with water, stir it, drink it down. And it tasted great. So if you want something that tastes good, makes your digestion feel smoother, and make your body look leaner and give you more energy, try Morning Kick. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. Vince, what were you saying? Something about the cold open? Oh, did you put on sunglasses?
Yeah. Cool, well, I mean, guy. Yeah, I got to get cool because this is a story arc about McNulty. He gets a booty call.
Yeah.
And McNulty, in the beginning of this episode, he's about to go have sex sober, which is how you know that Jimmy is in too deep.
Yeah.
And he gets the call. He gets the booty call from Teresa D'Agostino. I really liked that he had to go into his son's room and he didn't think up like a good lie to tell his son. He was like, your dad's got to go meet with a friend.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I mean, at that point you could just say like, hey, son, dad's
going to
go.
Ball a lady.
Yeah.
daddy's got to go get his dick wet. So,
the kid's like,
fuck. Yeah, make me a brother.
But he leaves his, like a good dad, he leaves his cell phone on a piece of paper, which is what you need, what's what you do when you need to leave the house at 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. to go get some sex. He goes, does the booty call. She's watching the debate breakdown. I thought that was a funny clip of the debate breakdown where it really showed like the strange formalism of TV, even in 2004, where you have two pundits and they're just sitting like right next to each other with their legs almost touching, and while they disagree with each other, so weird.
They're like playing footsie while they're
It's like, could you guys imagine if you were like on a date and you're just disagreeing with each other, sitting next to each other at a restaurant booth? It's just
was
weird.
2004 wasn't K Street on HBO at the time.
I don't even know.
James Carville and his wife, who's a
I didn't even know James Carville had an HBO show.
He was Mr. HBO for
I did not know that.
Up to.
Wow. God.
It was one of those weird ones where it was like kind of real.
Oh, like part
was like
of it
fake
wasn't
half
real?
Reality. It was really weird.
That sounds awful. We need to watch that show.
But it was him and his. It followed him and his wife, who's a Republican strategist.
Yeah, isn't it cute how they disagree on everything, but they're still married to each other?
And then they go home to their mansion.
Yeah, like, isn't it cute how no one believes in anything and this is all fake?
Beautiful.
I have a clip of the cold open of this episode.
Are you sure you're not sleeping?
No. What's up?
Shawnee.
What?
I have to go out and see a friend for a little bit.
Shawnee.
Come for an hour.
Kara Camp had an early opportunity to cap.
But ultimately, this was a referendum on the leadership of George W. Bush on the war against terror and the war in Iraq.
You're so full of shit. Nothing mattered in the red states but the economy.
Look at that butt.
You know what? Not that this wasn't fun, but it might be nice to have dinner first.
Wonders of wood carving. Seriously.
He wrapped himself in the American flag at the convention and never looked back. He was trying to defend the people in the battleground states, the ones who really
bearing back the landings of the first.
I love him coming home from a little booty call and then putting back on the politics show.
Yeah,
I'm
to see if he can get into
interest
it.
In her. In her copies.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. See,
and then he realizes, like, no, this shit is super boring. Yeah. I'm going to watch the History Channel again. And this is also like another funny little slice of life because, I don't know, maybe in like, what, 2015 or so, like the History Channel pivoted hard to be
aliens.
Like super political propaganda. Like in 2004, it was seen as like the apolitical network for dads who just want to relive World War II. You can't do that anymore. You're not going to throw on the History Channel and relive some history anymore. It's going to be
at the start of the pipeline, and now
yeah.
Then they were like, angry, 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 angrier.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's like all dads are political. We only make bespoke content for specific brands of political dads.
Yeah, yeah. Politics dads reign supreme. If you want to, you know, promote your content, you better have a "is this woke or not" angle.
Because your dad's gonna ask.
Because your dad will ask. Speaking of which, I just
does this got those wokes in it?
Now I go onto Twitter. My favorite thing to do is whenever I see a tweet that, like, I saw one that was like, apparently Ron DeSantis used a little bit of Peaky Blinders in one of his campaign ads, and the official Peaky Blinders Twitter account said, "We did not allow him to use that. You know, this is to all Peaky Blinders fans." And someone, the first comment was, "Peaky Blinders gone woke now." I'm just like, your brain is Swiss cheese. Your brain is literally Swiss cheese. Like, I just, I love it. I love it. I love it.
So yeah, McNulty, like, it's funny because he has like a full arc in this episode, which is like he goes from like a post sex high, feeling himself, thinking about
he
like,
he's so great.
We're the best cops. We're the best cops on this force. And then he tries to like brag about it. Teresa D'Agostino at dinner later, and she's like, "What are you talking about, bro? Nobody cares."
Yeah, I have the first clip of him bragging to Freeman, and there's a little Easter egg in there.
Where he sees Beatty on the refrigerator.
Well, there's that Easter egg, but then there's also the Easter egg of he is trying to list cops who could do what they do.
And he mentions Ed Burns.
And he mentions Ed Burns, one of the creators of the show, which I got to imagine there was some pushback.
Can you play that clip of the cop going by going, again? Because it was a little bit of that.
Four big guys. And they bust on my eyes. They eat my ass.
Ed Burns is the best cop ever.
Oh, yes. But yeah, he mentions, you know, Ed Burns and then a bunch of other people. And he's like, not anyone could do what we do. You know, we build cases. We do real police work. And Freeman mentions like, hey, do you have a hobby?
Yeah.
And McNulty is just like, fuck you. He's so mad at him. I love that.
Well, he's like, hey, you know how this ends, right? Like, you don't get anything for this. Like,
right.
You better feel very gratified by what you're doing, because no one else is going to care.
Right.
Especially asking stand-up comedians what their backup plan is.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
No,
yeah, they're
the
like,
next show.
Yeah, you have something outside of doing this bar show, right? And it's like, well, yeah, no, I'm going to put an album together. And it's like, what happens after that? Fuck you. That's what happens after that. No, but like I think it's the same level of delusion as like a stand-up comedian, where it's just like,
what I do is so fucking important.
Yeah, you know, it's like, hey, this is fun in the little like cop community we have of people who give a shit, but you realize outside of work, like nobody gives a shit about all this. And I think it's true of every job.
The cops in the other scenes don't give a shit.
Right. Yeah. Most of the cops don't give a shit themselves, but like the ones that do, you know, are like, okay, that's cool. You know, you talk to
Ed Burns.
Yeah, you
could name like six guys that give a shit.
Right. You can name six guys who give a shit. And, you know,
one's an executive producer of the show. That
right. Yes. And so, yeah, it is like Freeman makes, I think, a very good point. I have a clip of that scene
out there can do what we can do with the case. Don Warden, Ed Burns, Gary Childs out in the county. There's not many.
We're good at this, Lester. In this town, we're as good as it gets.
Tell me something, Jimmy. How exactly do you think it all ends? A shining Jimmy McNulty day moment? When you bring in a case so sweet, everybody gets together and says, oh, shit, he was right all along. The job will not save you, Jimmy. It won't make you whole. It won't fill your ass up. Or you need something outside of this here.
Like what? Dollhouse miniatures?
A life, Jimmy. You know what that is? It's the shit that happens while you're waiting for moments that never come.
dude, that is some of the best life advice that, yeah, not just for a cop, but for anybody.
Yeah, and I like that Jimmy's full range of emotions that he goes through in that 5 seconds, where he goes from like, yeah, that is kind of what I wish would happen, was that they'd throw me a big parade and tell me how smart I was for being right. And then a second later, he's like, shit, that's never going to happen, is it? Doesn't matter how right I am. They're never going to throw me a parade. Fuck.
I'm not getting a parade.
I better make some calls.
Oh, yeah. I better call Beatty and become a father.
Yeah. You know, at least I'll get to fuck tonight. That's for sure. But
yeah, dinner first too.
Yeah. So I, what's interesting is, like, Vince, you're talking about, like, he's really feeling himself, I think, in the first half of this episode. And then in the second half, the reality strikes him all at once, starting with that scene. And then, of course, leading to him, you know, being around when Przybylowski murders a cop. And being like, fuck. Meanwhile, like, Przybylowski's entire life and career at this point is now being reduced to all of the fuck ups that he had. You know, they're all sitting around and talking about, like, how, you know, he's a Nepo baby, how he shot up his car, you know, how he's, like, not even that good at crossword puzzles. And then, like, Jimmy has been spending this whole episode trying to get this date with Teresa D'Agostino.
Oh my god.
She's the key. He's gonna have a real adult relationship with this woman who's smart and does careers.
Who gets it? Who gets it?
I kinda know what she does. She kinda knows what I do. We respect each other.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Her eyes go so dead during that dinner.
He's not an equal to her because he didn't go to fancy college.
Yes. And I have the clip of them having their wonderful dinner together with the great conversation.
Loyola, I'm only 1 year. My girlfriend got pregnant, so.
So you became a cop in Baltimore. How's that working for you?
Well, that's pretty good. You know, I do a lot of high-end drug stuff. The fact is, there's not a lot of guys in the department can do that kind of thing.
I'm sorry, he went British there. Did you guys all catch that?
Yeah.
Idris, they've been slipping.
The fact is, not a lot.
Yeah, dude, this whole season he's been slipping.
Baltimore. How's that working for you?
Well, that's pretty good. You know, I do a lot of high-end drug stuff.
Pretty good, yeah.
Oh, bro, it's going good.
Hey.
I think it's good.
The fact is, not a lot of guys in the department can do that kind of thing. You know, it takes a certain... I know. You gotta love it. So you do what in politics?
I do political campaigns.
I mean, like a campaign manager?
More of a strategist, really. Not so much the day-to-day stuff, but the strategy of how a candidate can win. A consultant of sorts. Who'd you vote for this time?
What, you mean Bush and... what's his name?
Kerry. You didn't vote for president?
I thought about it, yeah, and, you know... Bush seemed way over his head, I know, but they wasn't going to win in Maryland anyhow. Besides, these guys, doesn't matter who you got. None of them has a clue what's really going on. Hey, that's just me, though.
Love how little they could each care about one another's, like, life's work. Like, the idea that, like, they're just both...
Oh, you didn't vote?
Yeah.
For president?
I love that. I love that he's just like, yeah, Bush and, you know, Heinz ketchup husband. Him having no idea is fucking wonderful. And also...
And her big timing him because she's like, oh, yeah, no, see what I do? I can't really explain it because it's kind of bullshit. And that's where the money is, dumbass.
I love it. I love that.
So what's the difference between an agent and a manager?
Right. Yeah. Totally, totally. That's like he is asking, what do you do? And she's like, work on political campaigns. Oh, like a campaign manager. No, I don't like work all that hard. Yeah. I'm more of a like ideas guy.
Yeah, I have some opinions about how a campaign should go, and I try not to use facts to undercut those as much as possible.
Like I do the strategy.
I don't do that bitch ass day-to-day.
No, I don't like get coffee, you know, I don't do all the like, you know, hey, you have a meeting.
People get me coffee.
I mostly make assumptions about the desires of blue collar people like you who I despise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally.
Sometimes while naked.
Yes, it's literally
it's
her.
How I can afford these severe haircuts.
Yes. She does have a severe haircut. Yeah, no.
So they know that I do not fuck around.
Exactly. Yeah, no. People got to know that this bitch is serious about strategy. I love her strategy so far with Carchetti's campaign. Seems to be telling him no 1,000 times over and then being like, have you considered getting your black best friend to run for mayor as well to split the black vote?
I mean, this is such like a brilliant, the way they set up this storyline, it's like it, when you watch it, knowing how it turns out, it all seems so obvious. But in the lead up to it, like, I don't think I knew beforehand that he was going to trick his buddy into running and use it as a strategy to split the black vote. Like,
yeah.
But in retrospect, I don't think even Teresa D'Agostino knows what he's up to here.
Yeah. And
but he clearly has it all in his mind. It's like it's all shaping up and he's like he's got it all figured out.
Totally. And in this episode, you actually see him really like in a position where you're like, God, you're kind of a piece of shit, Carchetti. You're kind of a piece of shit. Because Gray offers him a spot like on his campaign to be like, you know, city council president. And I have the clip of Carchetti and Gray talking to each other.
We should do that.
We.
I was thinking maybe you would ticket your white ass up with me. Make a run for council president. And me at the top of the ticket, an emerging black leader. Handsome, well-spoken. You, the great white hope. The new voice of civic reform. We give Royce a run, man.
And what makes you think I'm interested in council president?
What the hell else you got going?
He's got some dirty tricks going, my friend. he's going to screw you.
I'm moving in silence so the haters don't know my next move.
Exactly, dude. He's playing four-dimensional chess. His entire storyline is one of the reasons, and I've said this now like four or five times, one of the reasons why when Barack Obama said The Wire was his favorite show, I shuddered a little because I was like, I don't know if he because I love the Carchetti storyline of how he like does the strategy of like splitting the black vote and like it's like it's fun.
Little fingers his way.
Yeah, he little fingers his way up the ladder to mayor eventually, and I enjoyed watching that as a spectator. You know, as someone who enjoys a TV show, and I'm sure that was what Barack Obama liked too. But also, part of me was like, "Do you like? Is it the dirty tricks? Is it the winning of elections?" And to be honest, like he kind of. There's a little bit of that kind of that, you know, bared out to be the case where I was like, I think Obama just loves to win elections. And he did. He won some elections.
The thing about politicians is that they all love to win elections.
Yes, they do.
It's like their favorite thing.
It's like their number one. It's their number one thing. And I think that's the big bummer of it all in watching, you know, this show is kind of like, I guess at least with Barack Obama, it was like realizing like, oh, I thought you were like.
I thought your favorite character was Wallace.
Yeah, I thought you just like Wallace and, you know, Omar, you know.
And then like, you sort of have like the mirror image of Carchetti in this episode, which is. Bunny Cuddy. Colvin, who genuinely does want to do good things, but his goal of doing good things leads him to do some really bad shit in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know,
they kind of resolved this storyline like a little too pat. Like they gave him a big time pass for moving a dead body like 50 feet or whatever to the other side of the drug zone. And they're like, oh yeah, and it all worked out. And you're like, well, I don't know if that would
the medical examiner
out.
Looked really mad.
Yeah.
And he was like, I got, this is on me. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, but I think that what ended up happening is kind of proves, I think, one of the main points of the show and its views on war, the war on drugs, is that when you have the war on drugs and you have made all of this, you know, entire black market, you know, this pool of people into the enemy that you fight in the war, then all of your focus as a police department is on enforcement of these laws that do nothing, stopping people from buying drugs, stopping people from selling drugs, stopping people from, you know, buying and selling drugs. And then when you allow them the space to like do it, you know, basically doing decriminalization, at least in a small space, he is able to free up his police to actually do real police work. At least that's like the theory. And in this case, he's also able to talk to the dealers and go like, hey, you need to help me find out who did this shit or this is all over. And he is, while it was wrapped up like pretty quickly, I do think it made a pretty great point, which is that like, you will have more cooperation with your police if like they, if the criminals, quote unquote, if the drug dealers feel like they can count on you to keep them protected. I don't know.
Right. I mean, this is also a much more naive view of police work compared to like we own the city. Cause like the crux of this one is like, oh yeah, the cops don't want to change because people are inherently lazy. It's harder to take initiative and do a job that you haven't been asked to do. Whereas like a big part, I mean, you fast forward to like, we own this city and they're like, oh no, these guys liked the war on drugs because they were stealing all the money that the
right.
Cause
they were leeches.
Making,
they were leeches.
People and were that, making on drugs. So of course they don't want the drug trade to stop because that's where they're getting all their money from.
Right. Otherwise, who are they going to jack? Like,
they're actively
civilians?
Profiting on doing.
Yeah, Herc
badly.
And Carver are up like 11K.
Right. Yeah.
This
yeah.
Season.
Dude, but like, you have to remember, Vince, that like, The Wire, as for as bleak as it is not nearly as bleak as real life. Right. And We Own the City is just a true story. It is a fantastic book. By Justin Fenton. Shout out to the Justin Fenton Patreon supporter who is not the Justin Fenton who wrote the show or the book.
Did you ask?
I did. I was like, are you? And he's like, I'm not. Yeah.
It was really cool for us for that day that we thought the guy who did We Own the City was a patron. Day.
Yes. And then I was like, yeah, that actually makes a lot more sense that he's not, because
Patreon Justin Fenton. You've got a book in you. I know it.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do. But
I do like that they asked when they are finding out who killed the guy.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, is he related to anybody? Like,
yeah.
Oh, no. Fuck him. Like,
So I have a clip of all of that.
Find the shit if I got dead bodies up in there. WMD. If I don't have a shooter and bracelets, this whole Amsterdam affair is over. It's finished. I'm gonna take my people back up on the corners and we're gonna fuck y'all every way we can. Unless y'all bring me my shooter.
Sham, who is this kid, man?
Some young boy from Chucky's crew.
You connected? Ken to anybody?
Nah, he only been on for a couple months or so.
What do you use a whistle for?
Some nigga in one of Ghost Can crews laughed at his shoes.
What do you need?
To turn myself in.
For what?
A shadow boy.
I mean, I do love the kind of dollars and cents, you know, mind of like a Stringer Bell when he's just like, nah, we can't cover for this guy. You can't shoot someone in the free zone. Fuck this whole thing up because some bro did a, what are those? you know, like, no,
that
we're not.
That guy was a trendsetter.
Yes, he absolutely was. And you know, I wish they
would have, like, when he was walking up to confess, I wish they would have done like a ground level, like, shot from behind to see what the shoes
Let
were
me
like.
See the shoes.
Just like a little glimpse of what bad shoes.
I know he got shoe MacGuffins, you know, we're just never gonna find out. It's just like
they did the Pulp Fiction briefcase thing, right? Like, dude, come on,
is it his
soul? Show us the shoes.
Yeah. No, so we can only imagine what the shoes were like, but I think we can say for certainty that the guy who died said, "What are those?" and pointed.
Damn, Daniel.
Yeah, he fucked up. But yeah, you know, just the idea that would be wrapped up, to me, it's like, it makes sense. There was a sense of urgency there, and people are like trying to keep it going. And Carver is the one to blame for trying to move the body. I mean,
he
dragged the body 50 feet and didn't
even. It's really good because it's like they're both trying to do a good thing, but in order to do that good thing, they have to do this really bad thing.
Right.
And Carver doesn't understand really where this loyalty is coming from. He's just like,
can't make
dad mad. Like,
right. He was doing favor for dad, and doing favor for dad backfired. You know, he was like, but I tried to help. And like Bunny is like, you may have just fucked us. He was like, oh man.
But I was helping daddy.
I was helping you, daddy. I don't know. You know, it's like you feel bad for him because I think it's because he does believe in the kind of mission statement of Hamsterdam, where he's like, this is.
He hasn't even really admitted it to himself yet. Yes. It's like he's doing it out of there's something in him that's making him do it. I don't think he's quite acknowledged it yet.
Yeah. And meanwhile,
Kirk doesn't have as much cash on him as he used to. So he's. Pissed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Herc is done with this. Herc ends up being the one. I always thought it was Officer Nazi Haircut who was the one who like fucked it all up, but I forgot that it was actually Herc himself who ends up calling the Baltimore Sun. He picks up a phone and I think he dials 0 and he goes, operator, can you connect me with the newspaper? And they're like, which one? And he's the one I think who ends up snitching, which is I would like
as we all know, a prerequisite for snitching.
Absolutely. You start snitching, you're gonna get stitching. And you know, once you get stitching, you wind up in ditching. I don't know, man. That's what's going on in Hamsterdam. And meanwhile, what's up?
Can I go pee pee?
Oh, sure. Hey, right, a pee break? That means a second ad. We'll be right back.
We should pee all the time.
Yeah, I know. Then we make more money.
I forgot to tell Tom that we were on camera.
What?
And he walked past it.
I was wondering. I thought I saw someone walk by, but I wasn't sure.
That was my husband, Tom.
Husband, you married?
Yeah, we got married 2019.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I love marriage.
It's fun.
Yeah, you get to wear a wedding dress, and you get to wear
make
a
jokes
ring.
About owning people. It's
yeah
that's the best. Like,
I mean, who doesn't love to make owning people jokes?
It's a quick whizzer, Vinny.
Yeah, I just have to go pee pee real quick.
I don't have that. I like have to think. I have to think before I pee. I think there's something wrong with me. Okay, and we're back. I was saying before that Bunny is also getting kind of chewed out by the Deacon, who is played by the real inspiration for Avon Barksdale, by the way.
What?
And and that guy, he is saying, like, you know, if you actually do retire, then you understand that this entire experiment goes away and everything, you know, is gone. And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the French Revolution. You know, I'll explain.
Go on.
Well, we got the what is it? The Constitution of 1791.
Got my man Javert.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Javert is, he's a number, right? I don't know. I've only seen Les Mis once.
I've never seen it.
It was also different. I think that's the like 1830s revolution. It's a different revolution. Not that I know everything about. But no, it's when you have something that you're trying, this is a sort of a revolution of sorts, this whole free zone thing. Then the problem is with, you know, politics and leaving political office is that you have no one to defend it. It's one of the reasons that the Constitution of 1791 never fucking did anything, because they disallowed people from being serving another term, and then they doesn't matter. The point I'm making is that
was great. Do you watch a lot of the History Channel?
Is that I've listened to a lot of revolutions by Mike Duncan, and I have not retained much of it. But the point I'm making is that he's right. You know, you kind of are stuck in a position, you know, when you're trying to change things, of like, you have to be around in order to, you know, you have to work for the rest of your life. This is why nobody ever wants to actually get into like activism of any kind, because it's like, who the fuck has the energy to sacrifice their entire life for a cause?
And the thing about a system is that it's like automatic.
Exactly.
Like, set it and forget it.
Yeah. This is a set it and forget it system. And you know what? I got too much content to make in order to change things.
But there's an analog for Herc and Carve in the Barksdale crew, which
is
that? The two morons who see Omar taking his grandma to church.
We got to talk about the Disgusting Brothers, and we got to talk about...
they're trying to get a hold... Yeah, the Disgusting Brothers, they see Omar and his grandma going to church, and they're like, hey, should we shoot him or what? Mm-hmm. And they can't get a hold of anyone except for Stringer and Shamrock, and they're kind of just like, they don't really care. They're busy doing their co-op thing. They're busy having a meeting. Shoot him. So then they do it, and then everybody's mad at them.
Yes.
Even though they asked for permission first, and they tried to do the right thing according to their bosses, but their bosses are like, well, you did what now?
Yes. An entire rumor gets spread about what happens after the fact, and there's an entire church hat telephone game that's happening, and I have a clip of everything that is happening with the church hat.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!
So I definitely hit him.
I'm standing here holding a torn up church crown of a bona fide color lady. Do you know what a color lady is? Not your mom's for sure.
Man, I hear y'all shot the crown off of old lady's head yesterday.
They say nothing about no grandma, no church hat, nothing like that.
And the story's getting bigger and bigger. Like, I swear to God, Fat Face Rick heard that our people went and shot Omar Granny in the ass on purpose and all that, and they pulled their dicks out, pissed on our crown and shit.
Nah, I mean, I heard the same bullshit. What you gonna do with them two niggas you got waiting downstairs?
What you gonna do? Thinking about a lady in a new hat.
I fucking love that so much. The amount of gossip around the church hat, because it's not enough that they, you know, broke the Sunday truce, but it's also like they defiled.
There's a symbol for
an old civil rights era granny. They defiled her church hat, which has got to be one of the most expensive, luxurious items in the entire church garb for old ladies.
Those things are not cheap.
They can't possibly be cheap.
I used to try them on in JCPenney all the time.
Oh, they have church hats in JCPenney.
Yeah, and the black ones. The Cheltenham Mall in Philly, yeah.
Yeah, I gotta go to the mall more. It was... I don't know. It's great. Meanwhile, you know, like this idea of the Sunday truce, I think is, I don't know. I love it. There's something about people.
It feels very TV, but I like
sure.
it. Yeah.
But you know, it's real. You know that that's not like a detail they made up. I'm sure that there's there, you
yeah,
know,
that's gotta
like,
be something.
Yes, that is definitely a thing. And it's a thing, you know, maybe not, of course, in every city. But I 100% believe that in Baltimore, a city that is 90% black, where the church is such a like potent, you know, like area of community and, you know, just like a political institution, that people in general are like, hey, Sundays in the mornings, everyone be cool.
Yep.
Everyone tell your moms
it's that
you work at the airport. And
they got a temporal Hamsterdam going on.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, it only exists from, you know, whatever, 7 a.m. to noon.
Well, you know what felt kind of made up for TV?
What did?
Well, it took me out of it was Bay Communications.
Oh,
the Maryland based telecommunications company that sells burners.
Yeah. Yeah. That.
Well, that's another, you know, slice of life. Like in 2004, like here we are talking about how it's bad that communication can't be traced, which is completely flipped on its head now. Like it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine a telecom not immediately just giving the government anything they want.
Right.
In 2023.
Can you imagine how much we could talk about cops on burners?
Yes, yes.
20 years ago,
dude. Oh, the back when America was free. No, I mean literally, like this is pre Edward Snowden, pre like finding out that the NSA is indeed listening to your every word. Yeah, no, I found myself watching that scene and having the exact same opinion, which is just like, why am I on the side of Metro PCS right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm
good
totally...
for them. Yeah, yeah, it does take 30 days to like,
yeah,
process a subpoena.
Yeah, take your fucking time with it, bro.
Good for you guys.
Good for
watching
you.
Watch out for your customers.
Exactly, exactly. And yeah, you know, it's like one of the things with the show where usually I find that they are one of the rare cop TV shows that doesn't necessarily present the cops' agenda and cops in general as like heroes. At least not as much as like fucking, you know, every other show, like Law and Order and shit. But this is that was definitely one of the points that I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm not. I know I'm supposed to be on like Rhonda's side right now as she's yelling at this guy.
Oh, the Rhonda and Reddick dream team.
I know, they're so cute together.
How all dare right. you make a phone that the police can't listen into?
Yeah, you're telling me, just so I'm clear.
Yeah, and they're like fucking swearing at them in their business meeting. Yeah. It's like,
that's you're not... telling me that if I, the police, want to listen to a guy I suspect might be doing bad things, that you are going to let me do it, but I have to wait. You're evil. And I'm just like,
her
no.
argument is shitty, too, because then she goes right to murder. Because no one gives a fuck about drugs.
Right. Yeah,
she's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, they're doing murder on the phone.
Yeah. What if they...
Are you on the side of the murderers?
Are you a pedophile now? Like, that's basically what she's doing. But yeah, I was 100% on the side of... Go Metro PCS.
Go Metro PCS.
Show those motherfuckers that, you know, not everyone is
Cricket
a snitch.
Dot Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah, cricket.chesapeakebay.gov. I love that. I also this is just to backtrack a little, really enjoyed the fact that Omar is like freaking out. He's mad, and we find out that he's been telling his grandmother he's worked at the airport for all these years.
Yeah.
Omar,
so smart.
A famous gay stick-up boy of mythical proportions who literally cannot walk down the street in Baltimore without people being, oh,
Omar
shit,
coming.
Omar coming, is like going over to his granny's house and is like, oh, me? No, I work at Chipotle.
The airport.
At the airport,
could never visit.
Though.
That's so fucking smart.
Yeah, it's very smart. I love that his grandma is just like, okay, baby.
Well, she doesn't leave the house except for church.
Exactly. I mean, he's smart like that. Yeah. And finally, just to wrap all these wonderful storylines up, Cuddy. Cuddy is building his gym. Cuddy is
the red tape shuffle.
He is doing the red tape shuffle. He is finding out that getting a permit is not as easy as it sounds. And I, of course, have a clip of this wonderful montage.
Montage.
A boxing gym for kids and all. An athletic club.
Gyms, reducing salons, public baths are permitted only in property zoned B2, B3, B4, or B5.
All signed and sealed by a registered architect and engineer.
Floor framing plan, including the load criteria.
Hydronic piping and equipment layouts.
6 copies
of your fire protection plan with emergency exits and sprinkler system notes.
Health department, since it's a physical culture and health service, a license from the State Athletic Commission up on Calvert Street.
I'm sorry. I just did it. I kept doing a solo layout for you, Vince.
I was like, Vince, are you okay?
Just because I love watching your face as I do clips with Rock and Roll McDonald's on them.
It's like watching Chris Pine dissociate at Con.
Yes, exactly. Just,
that's what I do.
Every week he dissociates while I play Rock and Roll McDonald's over a clip that does not need Rock and Roll McDonald's.
Also, just like the 2004-ness of the Rock and Roll McDonald's, like that took me back.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm trying to, you know, set a tone, a place
and
time.
I love it. Place and a time.
Yeah. And that time, 2004. And that place, Balmer.
Balmer.
Yeah. And then Cuddy ends up, you know, cutting through all the red tape when he goes to Reverend Reed and then Wheelchair Watkins. And they make some calls. They do some deals. He shits on Unetta Perkins once again, just to remind us that
he just writes a little note.
He writes a little note that just says, I firmly support this, or something like that. And I'm sure that post-it actually carries a lot of weight because local politics are corrupt. Yeah, that's pretty much everything in the episode.
Cuddy's looking at that post-it note like, this is way better than a gun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, my post-it note says, I very much support this. And it under it, it also says, don't call the cops, I have a gun. It's, you know, two birds. Or one bird, two stones. That's what I say. Favorite scene, least favorite scene, scene we didn't talk about? Vince.
I definitely like the progression of Jimmy's facial expressions when Lester's telling him there's going to be no parade, because you can tell like it's some part of him really thought that there might be a parade for him at one point, and then he slowly comes to realize like, oh shit, that he's right, there really isn't. Least favorite, there wasn't a ton of stuff that didn't ring true for me. I guess I could say I don't entirely believe that Omar, who is like a connoisseur of people's worst impulses, like the idea that he would be so taken aback that someone would break the Sunday truce in order to kill him, I don't know if that entirely rings true for me, but I forgive it, because, you know, I get it. His character is man with a code. He's the closest thing The Wire has to a hero. He is the guy who lives outside of these systems that are crushing everybody else, but
man's got to have a code. And I think if anyone is going to be like, well, I never, it's going to be Omar, to the fact that they broke this code that apparently everyone agreed with. Allison, do you have a favorite scene or least favorite scene? Something we didn't talk about?
I liked that Presbyluski's little fortune cookie came true.
Yeah,
and
I
his
know.
Friend that revealed itself was Lance Reddick. I cannot remember. Daniels.
Oh,
Lieutenant
true.
Daniels, who was like,
all
these other guys are out there, like, say, like his father-in-law is out there, like, talking about, like, they have to save their own ass.
Right.
Like, we can't go in there and talk to him. The only guy who can go in there and talk to him with no repercussions.
I love that. I didn't read into that at first. I was like, the friend revealing himself was when they pulled the badge.
His little friend.
Yeah, well, no. Yeah, say hello to my little friend. No, it was that the person that he shot would end up being a friendly. you know, another cop. But I actually like that the friend was his only friend in the show, which is Daniels, who's like, please get a lawyer. Because these guys will fuck you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. That's very nice. He's a good friend.
He's a good friend.
Yeah. I think
I didn't like that they shot Omar's grandma in the butt. And pissed on her church crown.
My favorite scene is, I don't know, it's probably when Presbyluski is revealed to be a Antifa super soldier. My least favorite scene. I don't have a least favorite scene. I loved it all. It's The Wire. And if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, it's The Law, I would give it B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter?
Ooh, grade? If I had to, yeah. I'm gonna say solid B+. Tough question.
Who knew that was gonna say? Allison Mack, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Like you're forcing me?
It's The Law.
It's The Wire. I gotta say B+.
B+. Oh my God. Guys, that is a B+ episode of The Wire and an A+ episode of Pod Yourself, The Wire. Allison Mack, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, talking about The Wire with us.
Thanks for having me. This was
of course,
so fun.
Where can people find you?
As long as it's still working, I'm on Twitter at Allison_Mack.
Hell yeah.
Doing stand up around LA.
Come
see me at Verdugo Bar at the end of the month on Sunday at 8 p.m.
Do it. Come to Verdugo Bar. End of the month. Allison Mack, always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you
for coming on the pod. Wires. Patreon.com/Fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince Mancini, are you ready to give two shout outs / street names to these $8 tier people?
I sure am. I'm all set to go.
Oh, hell yeah, dog. First one is, hi, I saw her. your wife, Borat. Okay, first one is Cat B.
Cat Von B. We're going to call her the Ink Blaster.
Ink Blaster, Cat B. And
Cat Von D, you know. That she's
No. I got it immediately.
Is she a Nazi now? I don't know. I feel like anytime someone gets really into tattoos, there's going to be like some overlap with like Nazi people.
I don't know
if that's her fault or if that's just like, you know, the tides just, that they swim
the
in.
Culture. I think if you get enough tattoos, eventually you're like, the only one I don't have is a swastika.
Well, it's like the biker thing where they're like, I don't know, we also really like skulls and helmets and you know, I don't know.
It's true. The like, you know, the Nazi aesthetic is very biker.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. What can you do? Lastly, David Wince.
He's wincing. He's flinching. We call this guy Squints.
Squints! I love it. We got Squints and we got the Ink Master. Thank you so much for joining the Patreon at the $8 tier. As you can tell, we only have a couple names this week. That's because we are slowly running out of names. And once again, if you have not heard your name and you're like, I gave money a while ago, what happened? Email us, fraudcast@gmail.com. And Vince, sorry, while we have, you know, usually this, you know, lasts, I would say, hours, you know, in which you read people's names. So since that didn't happen, I'm going to play you just a little bit of the end of the song.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. All right.
Excellent work, as always.
Yeah, I'm just watching, you know, I'm watching your face, and you look like you're about to pass out.
It was a struggle to make it through this podcast because I'm like hopped up on a lot of cold medicine right now.
You did a good job.
Judge my reactions.
No, you did better than you've. You should take more cold medicine because you put on the sunglasses. You really, I thought you did wonderful.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/broadcast once again for all the bonus episodes, plus early access to all these episodes. Broadcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All righty, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not.
We are the crowd getting Chinese takeout. Brazitz is fortune cookie. They get a signal 13 on the radio. Dubanese stuff on the way home. Presbo and McNulty, they decide to split up. Pres looks down the alley, sees a guy with a gun, and so he attacks. Thinks the cops will have his back till he sees the dead guy's badge. Shot a policeman.
See, what is my least favorite scene in this episode?
A few moments later.
You know, these people, they're not PC enough anymore. Anyways, Brent, you can cut all that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.